Afghanistan's new governing council will include two women. Western donors say they'll insist that the new government give women equal rights. Economists say allowing women to attend school and pursue careers will be a crucial step in reconstructing the economy. Afghanistan is not the only place where religious beliefs and patriarchal traditions have curtailed women's rights and limited economic development. NPR's Kathleen Schalk reports.
There are huge differences between the nations of the Middle East, South Asia, and North Africa in wealth, education levels, and interpretations of Islam. But development economists say all of these countries could benefit from giving more opportunities to women.
An investment in a woman is always an investment in the next generation.
Nancy Birdsall is president of the Center for Global Development at the Institute for International Economics. She says income, health, productivity, and life expectancy all rise when women are educated.
We know that educated mothers have fewer children on average. We know that the mother's education affects children's education more than father's education.
And women spend more of their income on children than men. The impact can be dramatic. Jennifer Seymour Whitaker is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She cites the case of Egypt.
There are simulations in Egypt that show that if mothers with no primary education had finished primary school, it would reduce the percentage of the population below the poverty line by 33%.
Women's status within marriage matters too. Women with more rights generally have fewer children. A recent World Bank report entitled Engendering Development says the inequities in marriage are larger in the Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia than in other regions. And in some of these countries, population growth rates are among the highest in the world. Fuad Ajami of the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies says this places a major strain on economies.
The youth bulge in these societies is so remarkable and so strong and so pronounced that these populations are overwhelmingly young, and that you have to prepare hundreds of thousands of jobs, like something like 800,000 jobs, new jobs a year in a society like Iran, and even places like Saudi Arabia, which, you know, we think as places that were wealthy but really are no longer that well off. I think that the economic condition of the Muslim world cries out for attention.
But in fact, Ajami says, many countries, especially in the Arab world, have allowed secular education, individual rights, and economic progress to languish. He says fundamentalists have harnessed the frustrations of a swelling lower middle class.
It's a very reactionary class. It's a backward class. It's a class frightened of change. It's a class economically very marginal, and I think prone to all kinds of extremism, prone to violence against women, prone to religious radicalism, prone to panic.
He says as a result, women's rights have actually eroded. Samina Nazir works on women's rights and Islam at the International Human Rights Law Group.
The way it works is when extremist groups want to recruit more people, and majority of their recruits are unemployed youth, and they try and give them a sense of power. So one of the first lessons that is taught is that you are the head of your house. You, as the male, have authority over your mother, your sisters, your daughters. They're not teaching religion to young men. What they're doing is they're giving them a sense of authority in a situation where basically they are deprived young people.
Manaz Afghami, who founded an organization called the Women's Learning Partnership, agrees that women have lost ground.
I think it began in earnest with the Iranian Revolution.
But she says even before that, women faced special restrictions. She held a high government post under the Shah of Iran.
When I myself was Minister of State for Women's Affairs and wanted to go on a mission, I had to get my husband's permission.
And the same rules applied even to former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto.
It's the law. You need to have the permission of the husband to leave the country. And there you see the conflict and contradiction. On the one hand, you have a head of government, and on the other hand, you have to get permission from your husband.
In most Muslim countries, traditional Sharia or Muslim family law persists when it comes to women.
And Muslim family laws across the board are very detrimental to women's equal status.
In many countries, for instance, men can divorce women at will or forbid them to work. Sharia law is based on men's interpretations of the Quran, according to Shaha Ali Reza of the World Bank.
Usually what they do is actually use the customs, local customs, and say that that is Islam.
Human rights advocate Samina Nazir agrees. She says often Islamists know very little about the actual teachings and traditions of Islam.
Historically, Islam does not prohibit women from getting education. In fact, it encourages it.
Middle Eastern scholar Fuad Ajami hopes the struggle of Afghan women will inspire women who've suffered setbacks elsewhere in the region. But he says by trying to help Afghanistan's women, the Western nations may hand more ammunition to the Islamists.
They will basically say, look at the West, it didn't come in to hunt bin Laden. It came for many, many other things. It came to impose its cultural hegemony, its norms, its most important norms, that is the matters of family, the matter of men and women on Muslim societies.
But Ajami says the U.S. and other nations should stick to their principles and help women win equal rights, not just in Afghanistan, but throughout the Muslim world. Kathleen Schalk, NPR News, Washington.